So, Kathleen McTeague is a certified alchemical hypnotherapist. She had a spontaneous realization of the non-dual nature of reality and has worked with that. And we are here to hear. We are here to hear. Two spellings of the word.
Uh-huh.
Of the homonym. To hear about what she's been doing with that, with her talk, Remembering the One. Thank you so mm-hmm. much for coming to Many Rivers.
You're welcome. Thank you for having us. All right. Well, welcome, everyone. Thank you so much for coming out on this cold night to Remember the One. And I'd like to start with a brief meditation, and then I will give a talk on the subject, and then I'd like to open it up for comments and questions, and then if we have time, we'll end with a brief meditation as well. So I invite you to go ahead and let's get comfortable for this brief meditation. And just if you're comfortable, perhaps closing your eyes and beginning to get a sense of how your body feels on the chair and your feet on the floor. And let's take a deep breath. And just have the intention to let go of any tension in your body or mind. Breathing out any tension. Letting go of all the activities of the day and just bringing yourself here into this room, into this space, for this divine remembrance. And you might even begin to get a sense of a feeling of relaxation and peace, and just opening up to this place of relaxation. And any thoughts that arise, you might just imagine them as clouds in the sky passing through. No need to push them away or get involved. Just letting the thoughts pass through. And just imagine, if you could, your body just melting into the chair as you just drift on into this place of silence. So now just begin to bring your consciousness back into the room, becoming conscious of the sounds around you and the feeling of your body on the chair, and bringing that sense of peace and relaxation back with you as you open your eyes whenever you're ready. So before I begin talking, I would like for us to take a moment to remember the one that's here sitting in the chair next to you, because this remembrance of the one is present right here in each one of us. And so I love the beautiful word namaste from Sanskrit. You know, it's very commonly used in India as a greeting. And basically it's saying, I bow to the divine in you. And so we don't need to use that word unless you want to, but let's just take a moment and just say hello and connect and feel the presence of the one in the person sitting next to you or behind you. So I say namaste to all of you as well. I love that, to just wouldn't imagine what a different world it would be if we even just took the time each day, you know, to really, with inwardly, have a sense of really bowing to the divine in ourselves and in each other. What a different world it would be. So before I begin talking about this topic of remembering the One, I would just like to offer a quote that I love by a Taoist sage. And he said, "The Tao that can be spoken is not the real Tao." So in other words, the truth that can be spoken is not the real truth. Who we are is undefinable, unspeakable, really. It's a great mystery. And yet we use words to talk about it. But really the words can only be a bridge to this unspeakable essence that we are. And it can really only be a bridge to this spaciousness beyond words. So, of course, mystics of all traditions through all the ages have always known about this oneness. It's who we are, right here, right now. It couldn't be otherwise. And so in any moment we can remember the truth of that, that this unspeakable, unknowable one is right here in each one of us with each breath that we take. It's the source of our breath. And so once we deeply know who we are, we know that we can't be separate from that essence any more than a wave can be separate from the ocean. It really is the source of our breath and the source of our life. And so, of course, there are many ways to remember this one. As I said, we can remember it in any moment. I'm sure if we went around the room here, we would hear lots of wonderful ways that each one of you remembers this one. We can remember that in nature. We can remember it when we're in the arms of our beloved. We can remember it when we're looking up at the stars in the sky, when we're lost in the beauty of a flower. We can remember this connection with this essence in all of those ways. And so when we remember who we really are, then we know that we can only appear to be separate. We can only appear to be separate from this essence that we are. And so we're living in a time, in a world, that for the most part has forgotten this truth of the One. For the most part has forgotten who we really are. And so we get to see what a world looks like when we have forgotten this essential truth of our nature. And we can see what a country looks like when it has forgotten this essential truth of this oneness, of this connection that we all really have with each other and with life itself. And so the schools of philosophy, spiritual traditions, have ways of describing this forgetting, ways of trying to explain how we have forgotten this essence. Of course, in Christianity, they call it the fall from grace. I'm content to let it be a mystery. I'm much more interested in the remembering. And thank God, Goddess, we can remember. Thank God we can remember. We can wake up from this dream of separation. And so one of the ways that we can remember this one is through what is sometimes called a spiritual awakening. I'm sure that some of you in this room have had this happen. We could say it's a mysterious way of remembering who we are. And so for some, it can be very subtle and very gentle over a period of time. And for others, it can be more sudden and disorienting. And so that's what happened in this life. There was a sudden remembrance of this one. And it was very disorienting. I didn't have any context or didn't know anything about this ahead of time. And so there was just a deep knowing of this truth of the One. And so I saw through this illusion of separation, this most basic thing that we take to be true in this world, that we're separate from each other, from the creation, from God, or whatever word you would use to describe your understanding of this unspeakable essence. The most basic premise that we take to be true isn't really true, can only appear to be true. And so, needless to say, that is totally mind-blowing. And what a gift that we can feel a sense of having our minds blown. This mind that is so busy trying to figure it all out, that it can be humble before this mystery and deeply knowing that the mind can't understand this or can't control it and can't do it, but that we are all it. Blessing to know this. And so after this glimpse of reality, I would love to say that I just became an enlightened being and just floated around and just nothing bothered me anymore. And it's not the way it usually works. So this was really a glimpse of what's true. But I went right back to what Eckhart Tolle sometimes calls, I don't know, I've got to remember this, it's so beautiful, I just heard it recently, God, the dreadful story of me. Poignantly, perfectly descriptive, wouldn't you say? I mean, haven't we all lived the dreadful story of me? And mine was right up there, as dreadful as anybody else's. So from having come from a very painful childhood, I was carrying a lot of wounding, and so there was no quick fix. And so it really was just the beginning of a very intense inner journey of healing and discovery and transformation that happened in time. This awakening to our true nature really happens out of time, because we exist, you know, the source of our being is out of time. But this process of transformation can be quite gradual, and for most people it is quite a gradual process of integration. And so I've been blessed with a number of wonderful, wonderful teachers in this process of healing and transformation, and one of them is Adi Ashanti. How many of you are familiar with Adi Ashanti? Yeah, quite a few, yeah. So I consider him one of my main teachers. I love him and have tremendous gratitude towards him. I met him about 10 years ago. And so it's amazing how this process of, I love when he first said that the mind can't understand this mystery of this knowing, and this unknowing, but that it can be oriented, the mind can be oriented. And so that's one of the ways that he helped in this process of orienting the mind. And so those of you who are on his mailing list, you know that we received a gift in the mail of this book, The Way of Liberation, just a few weeks ago. And first time he's ever mailed out a gift, which I just love. So, The Way of Liberation, A Practical Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment. So I would love to read a little bit of what he has to say of this process, that even once we begin waking up to who we are, that there can be this this integration process. And so I haven't even read the book myself yet, but I was just flipping through it the other day and I came upon this section, which is so poignant to what I'm talking about here, which is that he says, the enlightenment that I speak of is not simply a realization, not simply the discovery of one's true nature. This is just the beginning, the point of entry into an inner revolution. Realization does not guarantee this revolution. It simply makes it possible. And so he says, what is this inner revolution? To begin with, revolution is not static. It's alive, ongoing, and continuous. It cannot be grasped or made to fit into any conceptual model. Nor is there any path to this inner revolution, for it's neither predictable nor controllable and has a life all its own. This revolution is a breaking away from the old, repetitive, dead structures of thought and perception that humanity finds itself trapped in. Realization of the ultimate reality is a direct and sudden existential awakening to one's true nature that opens the door to the possibility of an inner revolution. Such a revolution requires an ongoing emptying out of the old structures of consciousness and the birth of a living and fluid intelligence. This intelligence restructures your entire being, body, mind, and perception, and this intelligence can cut the mind free of its old structures that are rooted within the totality of human consciousness. So if one cannot become free of the old conditioned structures, then one is still in a prison. Having an awakening to one's true nature does not necessarily mean that there will be an ongoing revolution in the way one perceives and acts and responds to life. The moment of awakening shows us what is ultimately true and real, as well as revealing a deeper possibility in the way that life can be lived from an undivided and unconditioned state of being. So this inner revolution is the awakening of an intelligence not born of the mind, but of an inner silence of mind, which alone has the ability to uproot all of the old structures of one's consciousness. So unless these structures are uprooted, there will be no creative thought, action, or response. Unless there is an inner revolution, nothing new and fresh can flower. So I really appreciate what he has to say about that, you know, that this inner revolution is ongoing and not static if we're willing to stay open to it, to basically be redone by this intelligence. And so this is the paradox, the incredible paradox of the so-called spiritual journey, is that here this essence, this knowing, this deep knowing of this one that we are, is present here and now, and yet we can have this feeling of that we need to go on a journey to find something, to find our wholeness. And yet that's what's true for most of us. Even if we've had a glimpse of what's true, there's still, in my case, there was a sense of I was on a search to get free of the suffering that was still very much a part of my consciousness and my life. And so that is the paradox of this process. And so in our formless nature, of course, we're already whole and complete, and we don't need anything. We're just fulfilled and content. But in this conditioned experience, we may still feel ourselves as separate and lacking and longing. And so that's where this inner revolution comes in. And as we're willing, I have found, as we're willing to surrender more and more to this intelligence, that we find that it really does know what it's doing. And by whatever name you want to give it, maybe you want to call it love, maybe you want to call it whatever name, again, it's just we give this unspeakable, unnameable one so many names, whatever name resonates for you, it's this intelligence that knows how to set us free. And of course, there are so many resources available right now on the planet. Oh my gosh! And the north and Northern California, the Bay Area, it's like, you know, it's a feast of teachers and teachings and so many great resources to assist us in this journey of healing and fulfillment. So I'd like to talk a little bit about our transcendent and immanent nature, these two aspects of our nature. And I love the symbol of the cross in this context, with the vertical aspect of the cross being the transcendent, more pointing towards the formless aspect, and the horizontal as being more the immanent aspect. And so for a lot of us, the motivation in the spiritual journey, especially at the beginning, is trying to get free of suffering. I mean, that's what the Buddha's whole journey really was about, was, you know, life is suffering and there's a way out, and I want to find the way out of suffering. And so I know for myself, at first it was very much wanting to get up and out, you know, like up and out as fast as I can, back like to that, you know, I want to get to that place where I know myself as this place of peace and wholeness. And I wanted, how can I get there and stay there? And so there was very much an emphasis of going towards the light and really wanting to leave the darkness behind, wanting to leave the suffering behind. That was, you know, I thought that's what we could do, just, you know, just push that all, you know, push that all away and just go towards the light. That's right, that's what it's all about. So, so then as time went on and I began more and more to be able to tap in to this peace within after, you know, with meditation and different techniques and things that I was introduced to, that suddenly I would just find I could still really be triggered, you know, just even though I was living more in a place of feeling a sense of equanimity, I could still be triggered into conditioned patterns. And I'm like, how, with all the peace and the love and the bliss and all these wonderful inner experiences, could these places still be there? I was amazed. You know, as time went on, really, I was frankly amazed. I thought, well, now, you know, now what do I do? So, and that's really where this process, that the immanence comes in, more of this saying, here we are human beings, we're in form, and there's, you know, there's a purpose for our being here in this life, and so how to deal with these conditioned patterns. And so that's one of the things that I found really powerful, and being willing to be open and honest that there still were things, there were still aspects that were calling out for attention, for healing, and for being able to come into this place of wholeness. So, I mean, we really are all a cast of characters, right? We all have many, many parts. And so these different aspects may be calling out for our attention and to be able to come into the light of awareness. And so this is where, you know, in that level, we have to be so careful not to get into doing what's called, maybe some of you have heard of it, spiritual bypassing. You know, I mean, that's basically where you say, well, you know, I'm so awake now, and I'm so enlightened, and, you know, I'm so transcendent that I really don't need to bother with this, you know, this messy human stuff over here, these, you know, these emotions and the stuff that's problematic. And so, you know, that's where it's so important to be able to stay open to seeing whatever does come into consciousness, even if it's something unpleasant, something that's been pushed down into the subconscious. And so, you know, another image that I really love with that is, you know, in The Wizard of Oz, you know, that scene where there's the all-powerful, all-knowing wizard, you know, the head of the wizard, and he says, you know, to the Dorothy and the rest of the gang there, pay no attention to that man behind the curtain, you know. So there's a way that we have to be careful that we don't become like the Wizard of Oz, where it's like, you know, now that I'm just so awake and free, I don't need to stay open to this other messy stuff that's happening on the human level. You know, so, I mean, I just, this process of unfolding and these different parts that want to come up for our attention, just to me it just seems indefinite. It's just really an indefinite process if we're open to it. So I'd like to share a little bit about what Llewellyn Vaughn Lee has to say about that. I went to the Science and Non-Duality Conference for the first time a few months ago, and I got to meet some teachers that I hadn't met before, so it was really quite lovely. Have any of you ever been to the Science and Non-Duality Conference? So Michael and I connected there. So it was really very wonderful to meet so many different teachers and just to be in community, you know, kind of feeling like you're with your people that share similar beliefs and interests. And so Llewellyn Vaughn Lee, do any of you know about him? He's a Sufi teacher and a lovely, lovely man. It was so exciting to get to meet him and to hear his talks. And come to find out, he has written so many books, and they all look wonderful, like, you know, how there's so many great books out there. We're surrounded with a lot of them right here. And so anyway, this one I couldn't resist, and it's called The Return of the Feminine and the World's Soul. And so it's come to find out, you know, for at least 20 years he's been teaching on this subject of the importance of this remembrance of the feminine and experiencing the earth as the Mother Earth, as a sacred living being, and how much we have forgotten that in our culture. And so I'd like to just tell you a little bit about what he has to say about this whole piece of these two aspects of our nature, this transcendent and immanent aspects. And so he says here, and also he's a psychologist, and he's very connected with Carl Jung, the Carl Jung teachings. And so he says, I want to explain something that Jung understood, which has to do with the light of the divine. The light of the divine has two aspects. One is what is traditionally known as Lumen Dei, that's D-E-I, the light of God, which is really the divine light of one's higher self. It's a very, very beautiful light, and it's very clear, very simple. It just is. And then he goes on to say, but that is only half of the way the divine expresses itself. The other aspect is what Jung found in alchemy called the lumen naturae, the divine light within nature. And one could say that the Lumen Dei is the masculine expression of the divine, while the Lumen Nature is the feminine. It is the light in nature, the light that is present. As a culture, we have completely forgotten how to relate to this feminine light. And so then he goes on to talk a little bit about alchemy, which is very important in what he shares in this book, and he says that alchemy is concerned with turning lead into gold, liberating the light hidden in darkness, and that alchemy is our Western tradition of inner transformation. And he says that Sufis have always known about the inner process of alchemy, and that as a result of Jung's writings on alchemy, we've begun to understand the nature of the inner alchemical work, the work on the alchemical lead, the prima materia, is the work on the shadow, the rejected and unacknowledged parts of our psyche. The philosopher's stone, the gold made from the lead, is our own true nature, the self. So rather than a transcendent, disembodied divinity, alchemy reveals a divine light that exists in the very depths of our psyche. And this light, hidden in darkness, is also our instinctual self and natural way of being, which until it's revealed is covered over by patterns of conditioning and the layers of the false self. And so just another couple sentences here where he says, and so it says, what is the difference between the light discovered in the depths of the psyche and the light of our transcendent divine self glimpsed in meditation or other experiences? It's the same light experienced in different ways. And the Sufis know that the beloved, the source of all light, has both an immanent and a transcendent quality. So I really appreciate that, because I think, you know, especially in the Western Christian traditions, there has been so much of an emphasis on this, you know, up and out divine being, kind of beyond, you know, back like in the formless, of course, God in heaven. And this is really speaking to the remembrance of this divinity that really is very present in each one of us and in the earth and in our life here in form. So I really appreciate that about what he offers in that book. And so a few years ago I discovered something called alchemical hypnotherapy, and I really was so impressed with it I decided to get certified. And because it really, it was actually founded by a man named David Quigley right here in Santa Rosa. And he's been doing this for about 30 years. And I appreciate it has a very strong spiritual component to it. And he actually really is using what Carl Jung brought forth with alchemy, the collective unconscious, archetypes. So it's very much about empowering individuals to get in touch with their own inner guidance. And so it really does address this going into where whatever we need to look at within our psyche that may be limiting us, wounding, conditioning, whatever. And so there's this ability. And what's so powerful about hypnosis is that it bypasses the conscious critical mind, and it goes right into the subconscious where our emotions and thoughts and conditioning are stored, so that we can really get to the root of issues in a very powerful way. And so, anyway, it's really wonderful work. And so just, again, to emphasize the importance of being able to acknowledge both the divinity in the formless aspect, the transcendence, and also in form. And so, this is another great book. I actually bought it a couple years ago when it came out, of Adi Ashanti's, and I can see that Rob or Jim, someone put it there. And, all of his books are just great. And this one, really, for anyone who is waking up to their true nature and is willing to just, as he says here, uncensored straight talk on the nature of enlightenment, where it really just goes through this process of helping us to discover this inner journey that can go on. And so I really recommend that book if you're looking for some guidance along those lines. And so just finishing up here on just what I have found to be so powerful in dealing with the apparent obstacles to this remembrance and to moving from an awakening and a realization, moving more into what Adya calls, is the name of his book here, the way of liberation. And, you know, for some of us, maybe, I don't know how many of you in this room, but an important piece of my journey has been to spend time with a number of teachers. And it's just been a very powerful and important part of my path. I'm not recommending it. It's just, you know, I really have no need to convince you that anything that I'm saying is true, because I know we're all on our own unique journey of discovery, and I know that we're all an authority on our own experience. And so that's what's so blessed, when you realize that we are all really, truly a unique expression of this one. Nobody's meant to be like Adi Ashanti. Nobody's meant to be, you know, a copy of Gangaji or anyone else, you know. We can go to these teachers and be blessed by the presence and this energetic transmission that, for any of us who have experienced it, we know the truth of it, that it is so transforming. It's sometimes called the flame of truth, the fire of truth, and it has the ability to truly, turn us inside out and remake us. And it's the blessed grace of this energetic transmission that I'm sure many of us have been blessed by with the teachers that we've sat with. And so, as I said, Adi Ashanti was one of my teachers. I was introduced to the path of yoga many, many years ago. And it's it developed thousands of years ago to do just this, help us remember this one essence that we are. And so I have such great love and gratitude for the teachers that I've sat with. So I just wanted to say a little bit about that, and then I want to just share just a little bit with you of about from Eckhart Tolle. Are any of you familiar with Eckhart Tolle? I bet a lot of you are. Sure, of course. He sort of showed up on the world stage with a bang, with The Power of Now, over 10 years ago, of course. And then he wrote the follow-up book, The New Earth, which is very much about this topic that we're talking about tonight, which is this awakening of consciousness of humanity at this time on the planet, and how he feels that it's urgent, really. I mean, ecologists have been saying this for decades. But now that more and more spiritual teachers are starting to really say this. In fact, I was very surprised. I think I peeked a little bit in Ajahn's latest book here on The Way of Liberation. And I think in the intro he said something about awake or perish. I don't know if any of you have seen that yet. But I was like, whoa, I mean, now I met him about 10 years ago and spent about, 4 or 5 years with him. And I never heard him speak like that. So there really is a sense of a lot of voices are saying, let's wake up and remember we're connected to one another, we're connected to this earth. And it's a great, great book, The New Earth, if you're interested in this topic. And then this one is a little jewel. I actually just picked it up here a month or so ago. And what he did was he drew inspirational selections from A New Earth. And this one's called Oneness with All Life. And it has beautiful little illustrations in it. I mean, it's really very sweet. I'll have it up here so you can look at it. So it's just really a precious... If you like Eckhart Tolle, this one just makes my heart sing. Just brings you his words, just right, just aren't they? This just bring you right to the presence. The presence. Beyond words. So let's just hear a little bit of what Eckhart Tolle has to say on this subject. So he says, when you contemplate the unfathomable depth of space, or listen to the silence in the early hours just before sunrise, something within you resonates with it as if in recognition. You then sense the vast depth of space as your own depth, and you know that precious stillness that has no form to be more deeply who you are than any of the things that make up the content of your life. The twofold reality of the universe, which consists of things and space, thingness and no thingness, is also your own. A sane, balanced, and fruitful human life is a dance between the two dimensions that make up reality, form and space. Most people are so identified with the dimension of form, with sense perceptions, thoughts, and emotions, that the vital hidden half is missing from their lives. Their identification with form keeps them trapped in ego. Just as space enables all things to exist, and just as without silence there could be no sound, you would not exist without the vital formless dimension that is the essence of who you are. We could say God, if the word had not been so misused. I prefer to call it being. Being is prior to existence. Existence is form, content, what happens. Existence is the foreground of life. Being is the background, as it were. The collective disease of humanity is that people are so engrossed in what happens, so hypnotized by the world of fluctuating forms, so absorbed in the content of their lives, they have forgotten the essence, that which is beyond content, beyond form, beyond thought. They are so consumed by time that they have forgotten eternity, which is their origin, their home, their destiny. Eternity is the living reality of who you are. That's Eckhart for you. Such a blessing. So now I'm just drawing conclusion to my talk here. I would just like to remind all of us that the journey begins and ends with each one of us as our own unique expression of this one. And so I've shared my perspective. I've shared the perspective of these teachers whose books I've read from. And there, as I said, are so many wonderful teachers in the world today, and certainly in this area, and so many good books to read. Oh my gosh, right? I mean, I've got stacks of them at home that I haven't read yet. Like, so, but, you know, I remember my first teacher said to me, and this is over 30 years ago, before this explosion of all these teachers and books and yoga, and he said, you know, he even cautioned us then. He said, if you want to know what sugar tastes like, you have to taste it, not read about it. And so any true teacher, any true teaching is always pointing us back to ourselves. This is where the journey, so-called journey begins, and so-called journey ends in coming home to ourselves. And so, you know, I love another quote. I guess you can tell I love quotes. And another quote that I love, and I think it might have been Suzuki Roshi, who said, I'm just a finger pointing at the moon. Don't look at me. Look at the moon. And so, you know, that's so beautiful, just to remember. And Adi Ashanti has said, I'm a window. Look through me. Not at me. You know, so as I say, any true teacher and teaching knows this truth of that we are all it. All it. Yeah, just remember the one. So we could end with the quote that I began with, really, couldn't we? The Tao that can be spoken is not the real Tao. So, with that, I'd like to open it up. I've lost some time. We're fine. We've got some time here for questions and comments. Yeah.
You spoke about your first teacher.
Yeah.
Who was that?
Well, that was someone who never became known at all, really. His name was Mark Pulsifer, and I've long since lost touch with him in the physical world. But, so he was a Western man and introduced me to the path of yoga. And so that was a great blessing. I mean, really, I can just tell you that for me, truth has been a life raft. So when you need truth, like you need a life raft, because your life is so painful and just, you know, everything you seem to touch wants to turn into dust. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, when you have this, you're on a mission to be somebody or be someone, as I think a lot of us start out in life, and when you just keep having to live through the dying of your dreams, you know, pretty high motivation for hanging on to truth. Yes, Michael.
I'm getting really clear on something right now.
Wonderful. What's that?
That there are different paradigms of language.
Yes.
And in a paradigm which is implicitly separate from that, you cannot speak that. But in a paradigm which is not separate from that, you can only speak that.
Yeah. I think I know what you mean.
well, it's like you say, like the Tao.
Yeah, the Tao that can
be spoken
is not right. Is not.
But the Tao is always speaking itself.
Yes. Right. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm, yeah. Yeah. It's just that's the form and formless dance. You know, the form and formless dance.
But in that first moment. As we speak. If we separate ourselves from that, and we're talking about it instead of
right.
instead In of talking it. The thing itself,
yeah, right.
Then we separate ourselves, and so
right. Yeah, it's a tricky dance. It's an interesting dance of speaking from that, and that's what I loved about. One of Eckhart Tolle's books also is Stillness Speaks. Mm-hmm. You know, so right, how can we speak from that and not about it? I mean, that's, yeah, holding
It's almost just an issue of timing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or presence. I mean, I remember one time I was at a place where someone talked to a teacher and said, you know, words, what's the point in words in a way even, you know? And he said, well, I feel like words can carry a transmission and that, you know, that they can be pointers. And again, it comes down to, I believe, the sense of speaking, as you're saying, speaking from that. We can speak from that, each one of us.
Words themselves are part
right.
of the great mystery, because
yeah.
each word in a sentence has to be separate from the other
right.
words in order for the sentence to work.
Right, right. And yet, you know, it's so precious to realize that there is this spaciousness between words and beyond words. Yeah, yeah. Thanks, Michael. Any other comments or questions or just sharing on your remembrance of the one? Yeah, yeah, Teresa.
Hi, Katrina.
Yeah, hi.
So, from what I heard you say, would it be true that in your experience, simply awareness of the conditioning is
mm-hmm.
For you has been the major way. Well, I've heard you say
yeah.
what I heard
yeah.
you say first. So is it
yes.
for many the major way to become free of conditioning?
Well, of course, there are so many ways, you know. I mean, there are just so many traditions and so many techniques, and oh my gosh, you can get lost in it. But my sense is simplicity is so important. You know, because we really can get lost in the complexity of all of it. And so really it's here in this moment and meeting the moment as it is and just becoming aware. Yes, this awareness is this awake awareness. You know, in any moment you can ask, who's aware of this sadness? Who's aware of this pain? You know, and so and just being able to really meet it. And we can begin to be such detectives in our inner world. You know, this self-inquiry can just be endless in our willingness to just be the observers of what's arising. And sometimes we can see that it's a story and that, you know, we can ask, is it true? You know what I mean? And we can see it's a story that we're telling ourselves and that then we want to just fall back into this awareness that's in the background and just really watch, you know. Other times we can feel that we're being called to really dive in, you know, like I was saying, this the work of the psyche and this alchemical work where we're being called to dive in and see what, you know, what is that pattern really all about, you know. So both work. Does that make sense?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Can awareness dive in?
Yeah. I mean, really, when it comes right down to it, it's awareness is, it's everything.
Yeah.
really. But for some, at first, when we're so identified with a separate sense of self, you know, we could call it the ego, then that's like all, that's a lot of humanity, that's all it knows, right? And so that's the blessing of any sense that we have of ourselves beyond our thinking mind, beyond our conditioning. So basically, yes, it's just this awareness. What can happen is more and more it starts flooding in, you know, so that we're not only identified with our conditioning, our life story, and we can feel the essence of who we are starting to come in as we give it attention. You know, as we give it attention, it can, we can start to feel it more and more.
How do you see the role of action in the dealing with the conditioned states?
Yeah. So what do you mean by, like, by action?
So, story? In seeing a, as you said, if you see that a particular conditioned state may be a product of a story.
Right.
That, have you found at some point it's necessary to also act at embodied, take an action that is goes in a different direction than the story would have you go?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, sometimes.
and I guess I'm asking that because that seems distinct from simply being aware of the story. That there's like an ingredient that's required in addition to that to, as it were, demonstrate in an embodied way that the story no longer is in operation.
Right, yes. Yeah, so it's like, basically, let's just say, for example, you know, I think very many of us, it's like a natural thing to be afraid of public speaking. And so, you know, I actually went to Toastmasters a number of years ago to learn how to, just in the most basic way, be able to be in front of people, let's say. So so then, like, if you take action around a particular conditioning, then it almost kind of basically calls up into consciousness whatever would be the obstacle to get in the way of that, right? And then you can move on it, and then you get to really see, because it's like, you know, anything that would hold you back shows up. So this could be in any way, whether it's, you know, being intimate with someone, let's say, like, or in this case, I'll stay with the same story of conditioning, which is then stepping in, like you're saying, embodying and taking action and form, so that the conditioning can really be moved through. Yes. Does that help, Stuart? Mm-hmm. That? Yeah.
Yeah. What am I asking about?
Yeah, because it's so interesting. I just heard a speaker again. I don't go to hear that many teachers these days, but I'm open to it, and I love it when I hear someone's in town. We, you know, it's just so interesting to see how the one expresses in each one of us, whether they're a teacher or whatever. And, you know, he talked about mastery in silence and in stillness and mastery in action. And I just love that, because I think some of us are just more oriented towards the outer expression, and some of us are more oriented towards the inner life. And that's what this whole, the symbol of the cross that I was talking about, the transcendent and the immanent, finding the balance between what is happening inwardly, and then, you know, to feel that sense of mastery of being able to bring it into form. So, and then it's like, then when you can really live it, you know, then you have the sense of that you've really kind of gotten to the bottom of that pattern, you know. And so for me, it's been this alchemical piece. It's been sitting with these different teachers, and it's been this incredible divine intelligence that I have just been called to surrender to more and more and more and more, and feel that moving in this life. But yeah, it's about finally being able to move into the action piece of the conditioning. Yeah.
Could you give an example of that?
Of the action.
What that would look like as an example?
Well, I mean, I use this example of, for myself, of really kind of consciously taking on this, like, fear of public speaking, let's just say, as an example, right? Mm-hmm. Does that, did that help at all? Like, just... You know, so in other words,
for an example from you.
Oh, for you, Stuart. Yeah, could you?
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of examples in my own practice. One that I remember that was particularly powerful was taking the action of coming out as gay in my workplace, mm-hmm. and my relationship to that now is not that it was something that I was doing to empower myself as a being so much as it arose as this. There's a very clear blockage. There's a very clear contraction, and it was a necessary step in my practice to demonstrate and to basically go through that resistance. Mm-hmm. And so the act of doing that kind of disclosure, opening myself to the uncertainty, on a psychological level was certainly beneficial, but at a spiritual level there was a confrontation and action, and an action that was in a different direction than the story or the contraction would have me go.
Exactly.
Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah.
So basically it was a step or an action that I took embodied, even though if I reflected on it, I could know my way around it and know myself not as being that contraction. Mm-hmm. And yet it was the step in the world that was necessary for a more profound shift to happen in my embodied state.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
How would you do that?
In that particular case, there was a what I'd call an organic arising of the knowing that was something to do.
Mm-hmm.
However, in my relationship with my teacher, there were many occasions where my teacher provided feedback such that I might be challenged to act, or I might be, or even if it wasn't a direct request or a direct, exercise for my teacher, it might have been the context in which my teacher was creating, mm-hmm. created circumstances where I had opportunities to either contract or to expand.
Yeah.
And it might even be simple things, but it might have just been in relationship with something my teacher was saying, whether I identified with it and contracted or got upset, or whether I could put aside my egoic response to a communication and simply let the information be and be something beyond the part of myself that was wanting to react to the communication.
But I thought the issue was coming out at work.
that was one example, mm-hmm. and I was offering other examples.
Yeah.
The issue of coming out at work was just one specific example.
Was that provided by natural opportunities, or did you have to say, okay, I'm going to go and do this thing today?
It arose for me that, oh, I need to do this thing today.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I
so did you go to somebody and then just say it, or did it an opportunity arise?
An opportunity arose. Yeah, I mean,
not organically. It
was the opportunity was pretty easy because I was a manager of a group and I had a daily meeting with about 30 people,
mm-hmm.
and so I had an opportunity where I had all these people around and I could just speak.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So in that sense, the situation.
So you just came forth with it without being asked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you just wanted to share something.
Yeah, exactly. It was I can't even remember what the occasion was. It was there had been some march or something over the weekend, and so I had a context I could bring up. Mm-hmm. But that was that particular detail and that particular aspect of my story is less important. It's just that was the that happened to be a good example that was mm-hmm. important for me at that time because there was a lot of energy wrapped up in that.
Mm-hmm.
It was energy that where I was not being in the closet and I wasn't lying, but mm-hmm. I became aware that I was withholding my work environment in a way that was not natural or free, so mm-hmm. Arose as a, the scene of a contraction and the realization of the need to take action with that contraction in order to be, mm-hmm. to embody something beyond the functioning of that contraction.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great example. Sure. Yeah. And this is what so much comes down to, once again, is just this inner listening right? We're the only ones who can really know truly what action it might be being called forth. And again, teachers can help us with that. But this inner listening is so important, and inner knowing. And then when we feel, like Stuart just so beautifully shared here, this impetus to share and to be more our authentic selves in the world. You know, I mean, listen, let's face it, like I was saying a few minutes ago, the world is just so caught in division. Look at our country, my God, you know. And so for any of us who have begun to get a sense of our authentic selves and the sense of knowing of the oneness of life, that anything, any action that we can take from that place will have so much more of an impact than coming from a place of division. And the more that we can be truthful with ourselves and express that in the world, it empowers. You know, we empower each other. I love this saying something about just, you know, when one person is free, it kind of, in a way, almost gives other people permission. And in a sense, who knows who you may have touched in your, you know, honesty, Stuart, and what you shared, mm-hmm. you know, and just how we support one another in our willingness to be who we really are. And to see how life is calling us forward in our expression.
Yeah. In my experience of doing that, it's not always received in a positive way.
Yeah, yeah, sure. Well, that's...
But I don't know if that's because I'm not doing it right, or...
Yeah, well, I mean, just that's the thing, too, is can we be who we are even if it's not well received? You know, that becomes a whole other
mm-hmm.
process, can it?
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
Yeah, holding strong in who we are, even if it's not really well received. And more and more, you know, what I'm finding is sort of my mantra lately is this sense of surrendering to this inner knowing and trust. I think that that's what it comes down to. I think that might be my last word on the paper here, so maybe that's a good place to end, unless there's any other questions. But just, you know, listen in bold, okay, in bold. Listening and learning to trust in inner knowing. So unless there's any other comments or questions, maybe we might... Oh, there we go. One more. I think, can we do that? Do we have time just maybe for one more question?
Sure.
Is that okay? Okay. Yeah, so yeah, go ahead.
Well, I have a friend who follows a certain teacher and on his path, and they tend to emphasize the destruction of the personality.
Uh-huh.
And when you get together with them, it's not uncommon for everyone to be very weepy and in pain.
Oh.
Because they're resisting their letting go, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And in talking to this friend, she's often encouraging pain, welcoming pain, and it's always about pain. And in contrast, I have another friend. And her mantra is sort of, it can be easy, just let it be easy. And I can see the merit of both sides. Like the one who's always saying it can be easy, perhaps she's prone to spiritual bypassing. Because she doesn't want to be in pain, so she tries so hard to make it not painful.
Right.
If it's painful, she moves away.
Yeah.
Whereas the other tends to go towards pain like a magnet or like a dog for its chow, you know, just
right.
like, hey, good.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It just seemed like there's a little bit of a masochistic elements at times to that particular mindset and in that group. So I had to kind of step away from it. Sometimes I'd be a little bit, almost a little bit angry with my friend because she was, every time I talked to her about this, she always wanted to encourage and focus on the pain. I just think, is that really necessary?
Yeah.
These are just some thoughts that I have,
and I was wondering
if you have any reflections or comments.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, I mean, what's true for me, and that's all I can speak from, of course, is that there ultimately, you, in a sense, answered what you needed to do was to back away from the place where it's always all about pain. So see, again, you know, you're listening to yourself. And so that's really so important, is just that developing our own inner listening and trust in what feels true for us. And so you know, this journey that I have been on has been, a lot of pain involved. And so there is a sense of really like a separate self that comes from a place of lack and longing and all that. And so there has been a process of a sense of a dissolution of this self that I took myself to be. And so it's like the more identified you are with that image of yourself, the more painful it can feel as it's disintegrating, okay? So, I mean, some of us are invited into that fire. It's just, you know, and if life, that's where life wants you, you know, there's this calling for this, you know, this process to happen, then it can be painful. Now, there's a difference between pain and suffering, you know what I mean? We can experience pain without telling stories about it or suffering about it, you know? It's pretty amazing. We can be present for pain. And so, you know, it sounds like you're seeing that they seem like two extremes. You've got the one who's all about, it's all about the light and the love, and it's you know, there are some groups where it really is all about that. You know, you don't need to be bothered with all that other stuff. And then, you know, for the group that's emphasizing the pain, I mean, that's so interesting. I don't know what that's about, but I'm not making a judgment about it. You know, in other words, again, this comes down, we're all on our own journey. And so those who have gathered together doing that dance, you know, that's the place for them to be until it isn't, right? But so